It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
The Guy Benson Show Sunday Replay.
The week's most interesting interviews
with senators,
commentators,
and newsmakers.
Giving you a replay just in case you missed it. The Guy Benson Show.
Joining me now is Charles C.W. Cook, senior writer at National Review. Check out his podcast, the Charles C.W. Cook Podcast. Charles, great to have you back.
Thanks for having me.
All right, let's talk about President Biden and the debt ceiling. I'm not even quite sure where to begin because I have been watching with interest how the media is trying to frame a few different tentacles of the current debate. There was a tweet today from Jonathan Lemire, I'm not sure how to say his last name, of Politico, also MSNBC, just an all-timer. I saw you reacted to this as well. Here's his takeaway on the dynamic right now surrounding the debt ceiling discussions. He writes, the U.S. stands on the precipice of financial calamity, testing whether President Biden's theory of governance can continue to work. He has prioritized deal-making throughout the debt ceiling talks, but with GOP obstinate, Biden is changing tactics. And Charles, just starting here, that's not just biased or shaded toward the left. That is simply a completely false reflection of reality in a way that I don't even know what to do with that. It's so dishonest.
Yes, exactly. That's not what happened. That might be what Jonathan Lemire wishes had happened. There is this conception of Biden that Biden himself likes to promulgate as the man who restored America's soul and proved that listening and bipartisanship are possible. That's not actually how Biden has behaved, and it's certainly not how he's behaving here. What has happened here is that one of the chambers of the branch of government that is in charge of the budget, that being Congress, and the chamber being the House, has passed a bill to raise the debt ceiling. And the Senate has not, and the president has said he won't negotiate. Now, in the interest of fairness, Biden wants something different than the House. They both want to raise the debt ceiling, but the House, which is run by Republicans, wants to add in some changes to the budget, to that bill, which is entirely within its rights. Congress runs the budget. Biden doesn't want them. However you come down on this, and I think it is perfectly reasonable where the House has ended up, it is simply a lie to say, as Joe Biden has over and over again, as members of his party have over and over again, and as the media has over and over again, that the Republicans in the House are refusing to raise the debt limit. It's not true. They've done it. If the Senate picked up that bill and Biden signed that bill, the debt limit would be raised. What Biden means is that the Republicans have not raised the debt limit in exactly the way that he wants them to. So for Jonathan Lemire to say, well, this might indict Biden's preference for negotiation and comity, absolute nonsense. There is only one person in that negotiation who is refusing to budge.
Right, and that's the president of the United States with much of his party in tow, although there's some disagreement in Democratic circles. But it's just so much easier, I feel like, to be a Democrat when you have people in the press who are not just willing to kind of pick up your talking points and run with them and give a little bit of false balance here or there with, you know, a quote from a Republican giving a different view. This is just a complete inversion of reality, what he's written in Politico. Like, oh, Joe Biden has prioritized, that's his quote, has prioritized deal making throughout the debt limit talks, but with GOP obstinate, Biden is changing tactics. No, Biden has not prioritized deal making. In fact, he has refused to negotiate until very recently. He spent months refusing to negotiate. And something that you've noticed, as I have as well, Charles, a lot of the rhetoric coming out of Biden simply doesn't even acknowledge the fact that you noted, very salient fact, that the House of Representatives has passed a bill that makes some spending restraint tweaks that I think are utterly reasonable, as you say, but that does substantially raise the debt limit. He's talking a lot of the time as if that never happened, as if it's just these legislative arsonist MAGA extremists or whatever his, you know, focus group phrase is. They won't do anything. They're not doing anything. And so, you know, we're trying to be the responsible party. Obviously, that was the playbook that they had ready throughout the spring and expected to be able to use into the summer or however long this raged on. But then the dynamic changed when the Republicans did the thing that a lot of people expected they were not going to be able to do. And Biden seems to be either forgetting the fact that it happened or deliberately omitting the fact that it happened and not changing the way that he's talking about this at all. And you'd think you'd have people in the press, the Truth to Power Accountability press, lining up to say, this is absolutely wrong. The ball's in your court. What are you talking about? Instead, we get garbage like this.
That's exactly right. He hasn't adjusted to the fact that the House did the thing that he thought they couldn't do and that a lot of us wondered if they could do. We have a narrow Republican majority. It took a long, long time for the House to choose a speaker. Speaker McCarthy, actually, despite his baptism of fire, has been remarkably effective. If you look at what the Republican House has achieved in the last 6 months, it's impressive. Clearly, Biden didn't bank on this. And this in and of itself tells us something important. It's not just that he hasn't adapted. It's that he can't. Clearly, the message, well, they passed the bill, but we don't like what's in it, is not especially effective with the American public. Now, isn't a guess on my part. Biden's approval rating continues to be a disaster. Moderate Democrats are peeling off. Business groups that Biden thought would be on his side are peeling off. Speaker McCarthy's approval rating is 10 points favorable, which is almost unheard of for a Speaker of the House, let alone a Republican Speaker of the House. Clearly, Biden or his team or his party understand that saying, sure, the House did the thing that I have said is imperative, the one thing that they have to do. They did it, but we don't like how they did it, just is not a particularly strong argument.
Well, and by the way, just to hop in here for a second, there's been polling on this from outside groups, from Republican-affiliated groups. They've done a lot of data on this, including polling battleground districts. And what the Republicans in the House passed, Charles, is broadly popular. People are in favor of extracting some spending restraint in exchange for raising the debt ceiling. As I love to point out, since we had the last big blow up in D.C. over this issue in 2011, not that long ago, the national debt has doubled. Whether people are debt and deficit hawks in general, they're not, but they have a sense there's too much spending. So the idea that you would try to mitigate that issue at least somewhat in this context makes sense to people. And when you get into some of the specifics, like going back to 2022 levels of spending or pre-pandemic levels of spending or clawing back some of the emergency spending or work requirements for welfare type programs, those all poll quite well, especially among independents, including in swing districts. There's a lot going for the Republicans here. And I understand we have divided government. You've got the Democrats in charge of the White House and the Senate, Republicans in charge of the House. It's a split verdict from the American people, and that requires the type of compromise that Biden sold himself as the master of, someone committed to it, sort of old school. And yet in this moment where you would think not only does he have no choice, this is like the chance for him to fulfill the promise of all that meaningless, obviously, rhetoric that he spewed at us in 2020, he's just utterly, totally incapable, at least at this point, of making any constructive moves in that direction. And I wonder if there's anyone out there who talked endlessly about how awful Trump was and how we need to restore our norms and Joe Biden's the man to do it. I wonder if any of those people are maybe having any buyer's remorse, especially given this 14th Amendment nonsense. What is this? This was like some fringe thing I saw on Twitter like 10 minutes ago, an obviously illegal scheme. And it seems like in the matter of a few days, it went from the fever swamp of, like, you know, YouTube comments to the president of the United States asserting that he has the authority to do this all by himself. What?
It's astonishing and it's disqualifying. This is a fringe theory A fringe theory that is designed to strike at the heart of the core part, not a part, the core part of our system of government, which is separation of powers. The first line in the Constitution, beyond the preamble, assigns to Congress all legislative powers. In the same section, Congress is given the power of the purse, which includes borrowing, not just taxing and spending, but the management of debt. This is the American system of government. Now, the 14th Amendment has a provision in there to do with debts incurred in the Civil War. It makes no alterations to that core system of government. Everybody knows this. At no point in the last 150 years or so has anyone serious suggested that the 14th Amendment permitted the President of the United States to borrow money without Congress. The idea is absurd. The idea would destroy our Constitution. It would allow the President, in effect, to tax without Congress. In 2011, when President Obama's Treasury Secretary was asked about this, he said absolutely not. He was backed up by Lawrence Tribe, Harvard law professor, who wrote a piece in the New York Times explaining why this was ridiculous. And fast forward 12 years, the Biden administration finds that pretty inconvenient, finds the fact that since 1868, when the 14th Amendment was passed, Congress had more, not less, involvement in borrowing and in issuing bonds. Suddenly, this fringe theory that no one believes is being endorsed from a podium by the President of the United States. This is outrageous. I want people to focus on that word. This is outrageous. This is not a normal political dispute. This is not one branch saying we should do this, another branch saying no, we shouldn't. This is not our usual back and forth. This is not disagreement within the American political debate. This is the President of the United States trying to usurp powers that are explicitly assigned to Congress and thereby to disenfranchise Congress and those people who decided they wanted a Republican House, which was overwhelming in the last
election. Well, it's norms destroying. I mean, again, the same crowd that clutched their pearls constantly over Donald Trump, sometimes with good reason, sometimes not, they would be losing their minds. If this were something that Trump were floating, you would have all sorts of constitutional crisis warnings in big red letters all over the place. People's social media feeds would be filling up about, you know, incipient fascism and all that kind of stuff. Instead, I was going to the airport the other day. They had the local news on here in Washington, D.C., WTOP, sort of the supposedly down the middle 24/7 news channel on the radio. And they talked about this. Some Senate Democrats are urging President Biden to invoke the 14th Amendment and raise the debt ceiling unilaterally. And the White House is yet to make a decision on that. Republicans say the idea is illegal. That was the whole report. They might not have even added the Republican say part. It was just like, oh, here's the thing that's happening, and Democrats want this to happen, and they're at an impasse right now. It's just sort of like easy breezy, no big deal. Maybe he'll do it, maybe he won't. That is clearly not the tone that is appropriate for what this fringe theory is suggesting, a destruction of the system, as you call it. It's also not the type of tone that they'd be adopting, as I said, if the partisan shoe were on the other foot. But there are some related issues, Charles, that I want to pick your brain about. So please stand by. Let's explore some of those as soon as we come back from this short break. Charles C.W. Cook on The Guy Benson Show.
In the swamp, not of the swamp, Guy Benson.
Charles C.W. Cook, my guest here on The Guy Benson Show Happy Hour. And Charles, we've been talking about the legality of this, the law, the principle. I want to ask you about tactics. Is there any thought in your mind that maybe Speaker McCarthy should maybe call Biden's bluff on this? Because if Biden is saying that he believes this brand new, totally psychotic idea is something that he actually can do within his authority, and clearly some of the people at the White House must know that this would be at least 6-3 thrown out at the Supreme Court, maybe 9-0. You never know with some of these liberal justices, but it would be absolutely tossed on appeal. could McCarthy say, why are we even bothering with any of this? If you think you can do this by yourself, we've got our lawsuit ready, Mr. President. This is, I think, enormously politically risky for Biden because of the economic piece of it, setting aside the constitutional concerns, which are paramount. I don't dispute that. But just even if you want to play along for a second, it seems catastrophically risky for Biden to even toy with going down this path. What do you think about that?
Well, I broadly agree with you. I think McCarthy would have to do it in a way that didn't look as if he was accepting the premise. I think elected politicians have a responsibility to tell the truth about the Constitution. That's why I'm so outraged by what Biden is doing here. Every single time the crazy members within Biden's party write to him and say, do this, whether it's student loans or the eviction moratorium, he eventually ratifies the idea from the White House podium, tells the American public, yes, that is a power I have, when in fact he doesn't. And I don't want McCarthy to do that. But if it's a negotiating tactic privately, McCarthy wants to play hardball with this, then I agree with you. He should absolutely do it behind closed doors. He should say, you know what? We've passed our bill. All you have to do is sign it, providing it goes through the Senate, which is up to Senate Democrats. Go on, then. If you believe that you can act without us, you have my number. Sure. But I don't want him to do that in public, Guy, because I think it is really important for presidents. And this isn't a Democrat-Republican thing. You'll remember me coming on your show and saying that President Trump was trying to usurp Congress's role by assigning emergency funds that he was denied for his wall. And yep. I don't think you had a show back then, but you'll remember me lambasting Obama over DACA. It is very important for presidents to stand before the American people from time to time and say, no, I can't do that. We live in a system of separation of powers. We live in a system of limited government. We live in a system of laws. I just want to see Biden one time say from the podium, I have been asked to do this thing, and while I would like to have that power, I actually don't. I took an oath of office. The Constitution that I swore to uphold is written down. You can read it on the internet. I can't do it. But he isn't. So someone's going to have to, and that's going to have to be Speaker McCarthy and others. But as a negotiating tactic privately, sure, it does somewhat weaken Biden's position in a perverse way.
Charles, you've been brutalizing President Biden in writing and here on the show, and deservedly so. You've also had some choice words for some other people on the left related to this. I want to ask you about that. Thank you for sticking with us. Let's take one more break. Back with Charles C.W. Cook on the Guy Benson Show Happy Hour right after this. We are privileged to have Charles C.W. Cook here for an extended conversation. I think it's important. Obviously, he does as well. He's senior writer at National Review. His podcast is the Charles C.W. Cook Podcast. And Charles, you've been excoriating some of the sort of intellectual writer set on the left, because they aren't coming out against this with this sort of force and clarity that you would expect them to. These are people who at least fancy themselves high-minded thought leaders, right? Not grubby little partisans. And so they have the opportunity to come out and say exactly what you said. This is absolutely unacceptable, completely and flagrantly unconstitutional, etc. But that's not what a lot of them are doing. They're sort of either kind of playing footsie with the idea like it's legitimate, or they're analyzing it with this detachment about, like, well, is this tactically the right thing to do, rather than standing up for the Constitution itself. And you've had something rather sharp to say about that crowd too.
Yes, I think they're a disgrace. If you look back 2 years when Donald Trump lost the election and when he tried to use the Electoral Count Act of 1887 and the 12th Amendment to declare himself, or at least to have himself declared as the winner, the writers where I work at National Review, which is a right-wing publication that prefers Republicans to win, did not say, well, maybe there's something to it, or, well, this won't work because it will be struck down. We said in no uncertain terms, this is false. That's not what the 12th Amendment means. That's not what the Electoral Count Act says. Of course, the vice president cannot make himself into an elections dictator. We have a system. We have a constitution. Why can't the equivalent figures at the New York Times and the Washington Post write those sentences about this? It is no different. It is just as much of a lie. Our laws mean things. That's why we have them. That's why we write them down in plain English. That's why we debate them. When we pass the law, we stick to it until it's repealed. We don't say, well, you know, if you squint at it, you can come up with this absurd novel reading that nobody has in American history. It is not true that Vice President Pence was able to change the results of the 2020 election. It's not sort of true or a bit true. It's not a matter of opinion or judgment. It's just not true. And those who write for a living have a responsibility to say that, whether they like the consequences of that or not. And I think the same is true here. I don't really care what Ezra Klein thinks about the policy here. I don't care whether he likes Kevin McCarthy or not, whether he likes the debt ceiling, whether he thinks it should be accompanied with cuts. I care about the fact that this is a violation of the law and that the president is endorsing it from the presidential podium. And I think that these people who work in positions of influence should be willing to say so. And if they're not, then, well, we know that they're useless.
Do you think they're not for the same reason that Biden, in a separate column that you wrote, listing out some of the examples, seems to never, ever stand up to the hardcore left-wingers in the coalition? Are they all just basically beholden to the hard left, sort of scared of them, feel like that's the rising future of their coalition, of their tribe, and it's all outcomes-oriented, so they kind of just want to do or say whatever they think they can get away with, and ultimately it's about advancing the ball and maybe not pissing off the base? Is that the consideration here? I'm not really sure how we get into their minds, but it's very disturbing to watch.
I think that's some of it. I also think that they just don't believe in the law as an objective external source of truth and stability. I think they see it as a toolkit to be manipulated, as the preserve of other people. That's why I'm a conservative. I believe in truth. And, you know, there is a truth as to what the 14th Amendment means, and this is not it. So, you know, that's my obligation as an American citizen who raised my hand and took an oath to the Constitution, and as a writer who has readers, is to say what is true. And I am profoundly disappointed that so many people on the other side have proven unable to reciprocate when the shoe is on the other foot.
Lastly, pure conjecture, coming back to a point I raised earlier, just sort of wondering out loud, if and when he, you know, breaks glass, pushes the 14th Amendment button, whatever that is, the whole thing makes absolutely no sense. It's just patently absurd and unconstitutional. But let's say he decides to go that route. I don't think he will. Personally, I don't think he will. But if he does, and it's very much within the realm of possibility now because he says he could, it would go to the court. Do you think this would be 9-0? Or do you think this would be an ideological split?
I suspect that it is so profoundly ridiculous that it would be 9-0. If you remember during the Obama years, there were some cases that came out 9-0 because the claim that was being made was nonsensical. It was barely even comprehensible. This seems to me to be one of those moments. If it weren't 9-0, I think it would be 8-1. I don't think this would fall down the traditional lines. I mean, in a piece in the New York Times that I critique by Ezra Klein, he starts wondering aloud whether three of the justices on the current court would side with Biden or with everyone else in American history. And I think that that's telling for a couple of reasons. First off, because it shows that he really doesn't believe in the law. He thinks it's all politics. But second, he never stops to wonder whether the three justices on his, in quotes, side would rule against this, which tells you how he sees them.
Right.
But I actually don't think, critical as I can be of those justices, I don't think they are as craven as Ezra Klein thinks they are. I think there are lines they won't cross. I think this is one of them.
Well, hopefully we don't find out, because Biden doesn't do this, because it is so obviously illegal. But perhaps we will have to wait and see, and we can revisit that prediction if the moment comes. In the meantime, negotiations continue for whatever that means, and to whatever extent that will bear fruit. But it does feel like a perilous moment right now, but you wouldn't know it from the coverage, because a lot of the people are either ignorant and don't understand what they're covering, or they are fully understanding what's going on, and they are just so blinkered ideologically that they're on board for whatever power grab their tribe might deem necessary in any given moment. And both of those explanations are upsetting, which is why I wanted to devote so much time to this issue today, with the passion and the intellect and the understanding of Charles C.W. Cook, senior writer at National Review, host of the Charles C.W. Cook podcast. Charles, thanks for taking so much time with us. We do appreciate it.
Thanks for having me on. Enjoyed it.
That was this week's edition of
The Guy Benson Show Sunday Replay.
For more Guy Benson Show, go to GuyBensonShow.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.